Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by the full crew back after a lot of travel this summer. So we've got Cody, Bo, and Tracy. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Great. The crowd goes wild.
Can't believe you let me back.
Karen's here in studio with me. Matt's in studio behind the glass. I'm excited to have everybody back. And Cody, what are we going to talk about today?
The leadership hat trick.
That's right. Karen actually said we should call it Hat Trick by Patrick. But, you know, that we all came up with this, but she just made a good play on words there. The leadership hat trick. You know, it's weird. After all the things we've done about leadership over the last 27 years, you can kind of boil down what it takes to be a good leader in three concepts. And I did a talk recently at a big event where I talked about these things, and I've never really written it this way, I don't think, in any of our books. But really, there are three qualities that make a great leader. And I want to talk about this today and flesh them out and have our listeners who are leaders or thinking about being leaders think, which of these is probably the ones I'm best at and which could I use more help with? So the first thing that we're going to talk about is wisdom. To be a great leader, you have to be wise. And when I say wisdom, there's a lot of definitions of wisdom, and we looked it up in the dictionary. I don't mean in the broadest sense of the word. I mean in kind of the more tactical sense, which is you have to know how to be a leader. You have to have knowledge and perspective. And that's a big part of what we've been doing for 27 years, is trying to impart knowledge and perspective to help people be more wise in the way they lead.
I love it, Pat. You have spoken at this event for 10 years, and I love the way you contextualize this idea. This is your 10th year at this big leadership event, and you're like, hey, for the last 10 years, I have been talking about this wisdom element. I was bringing a new model or a new way to run teams or a new way to try to hire ideal team players, all of the things that you've done. And the idea that you're in that 10th time sort of stepping back to say, oh, that all fell under one really important bucket around being a leader. And that is, you do have to have the knowledge. You can't wing it. There's so many leaders out there that garner knowledge through books or through following people like yourself. And the idea that you could just be a leader without actively pursuing the best knowledge around being a leader is not what would make a good leader.
I really like the word wisdom there too, because there is no shortage of information. You know, this where we are living currently is often called the information age. There's no shortage of data, of people's opinions. And leaders are able to, this is what you do so well, Pat, is filter through all of the possible information and know what rises to the surface. What is most important that we understand, that we grasp, that we illuminate to be able to help us prioritize, make decisions?
I really like how you said that. And we're doing this in real time here, because sometimes we think wisdom and it's like being a sage and knowing all things. And that's very broad. The other one sounds like you're just accumulating knowledge or facts. But I think kind of knowing what knowledge and facts you need and kind of netting it out, I suppose that's what we're really talking about here. To be a great leader, you have to have the wisdom to know how to lead and what to say and what all those different things. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. And we're going to spend the least amount of time on wisdom because we think it's the one that people, if they over-index on anything, it's probably that. And as glad as I am that people buy our books and use our stuff, it's not enough by itself.
But I do think that it's worth saying, you know, in a similar to what you just said, Bo, is like, you know, you often hear people describe themselves as a leadership junkie, like, you know, which is such an interesting term. They like want to consume everything possible around leadership. And if you don't have some way of letting go, like filtering through and letting go the stuff that isn't relevant or isn't a best practice or is not really wise in terms of the knowledge around leadership and surfacing, I love that. That's, the wisdom is really about the curation of those things, not the collection of those things. And so many people think, oh, I've got to read 100 leadership books this year. Well, that's a good idea as long as you know which ones are most important at the end of the year and which ones you can let go of or file away and for an emergency, you know, something like that.
And you know, it's interesting because I just thought about this as you were saying that, Cody, is wisdom would be deciding to read one book twice to really master it rather than read four books and not actually grasp the most important things, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So wisdom is important. We should always know that. Acquiring knowledge, knowing which knowledge is most important, curation, discernment, all those things is wonderful. But that's just the first of three qualities. Are we ready to move on? What's the next quality, Bo?
The next quality is humility.
Right. Humility. Now, this is something that we talk about a lot in everything that we do, but it's separate than wisdom because you can't learn your way into humility. It's an attribute, a virtue you have to master. And I think the book that really focuses on this the most would be my book, The Motive, which is, it's like you can acquire all the knowledge in the world about being a great leader, but if the purpose of leading for you is to receive the benefits of that, if it's reward-centered, if it's like, I want to be a leader and use all this knowledge and read all these books so that I can be perceived as cool or I can make a lot of money or have power or get to do what I want to do, that is the wrong motive. The real motive, the right motive to be a leader is based in humility and what we would call servant leadership, and that is, I have a responsibility to others. And so you can learn all the things in the world, but your motive has to be one of humility, which is I am at the disposal of others. I need to serve them and sacrifice for their good.
There's a connection between knowledge and humility. And it seems like people go one way or the other. Either they collect information and become less humble, or that old quote of, as the island of my knowledge grows, so does the shoreline of my questions, that the more you know, you realize how much you don't know. I'd not connected those dots before this. Talk about that, Pat. How is it that some knowledge leads to humility, but sometimes knowledge puffs up? It leads to arrogance and self-centered leadership.
Well, it's interesting. Now that I think about it, that's probably why you starting with humility makes the most sense. Because purifying your motive and realizing, and there's so many great definitions. C.S. Lewis once said, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking about yourself less. And if you go into this whole prospect of leadership without humility, the more knowledge you acquire, the less humble you're going to become. So starting with humility and saying, you know, there is a God and I am not him. And so who am I to think I'm important? Now, from that perspective, I want to acquire all the knowledge I can, not because it's going to make me feel important, but because it's going to allow me to serve others more. So I think that the right order should probably be humility first and wisdom second.
Yeah. The first speech you actually gave around the book, The Motive, was one of the times you were at this large leadership event that we just talked about. And the tagline of the event, I love this. I was sitting in the stands, like the tagline was, everybody has influence. And you said, and they probably shouldn't. That was the way you opened that speech. The idea that like, boy, this is so important for you to first recognize. The rest of the world is saying, grow up and be a leader. Whether you open that book with like a college commencement addresses, is like the rest of the world is saying, everyone should be leaders. Everyone has influence. We need more leaders. And I think what is so critical about the message of that book is, boy, we don't need more leaders, especially if they're not humble. We need fewer, better leaders, ones that understand that the way to do this is, you know, my favorite chapter or section of any of your books is at the end of that one where you say, I'm tired of the term servant leadership because it implies that there's another kind. You know, if you're not going into leadership with humility, realizing it's to serve others, then you're in it for all the wrong reasons and you probably shouldn't lead.
And then acquiring more knowledge is actually going to make you dangerous.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's like the first gate you have to pass through is humility. It's not about me, it's about others. And then more wisdom or more knowledge makes you better.
Yeah, and then that definition of humility isn't just saying, oh, I don't know, and I probably wouldn't be the one to speak into that. Well, the real humility of a leader who's informed, who's filled with knowledge is saying, oh, it's not about me. I actually might have insight about the right thing to do, but what I'm doing is making decisions in the direction of others, not just what's going to be to my benefit.
You know, it's funny. I've done over the last 4 days or so, I've worked with a bunch of athletes, some in high school, my son, and a bunch of people on his lacrosse team who's getting ready for a new year, and some Division I college athletes. And we talked about humility a lot. And it's an interesting thing because it's so easy to think it means I'm going to downplay my talents. You know, I'm going to downplay my talents. And that is not humility. Humility is to say, yes, I am good at this. It's a gift given to me. And when you get a gift, you thank the giver, not yourself. So it's not about denying that you're good at things. It's about saying, I don't need to call attention to that. I will say, yes, I'm really good at this sport. Yes, I'm really good at this. Yes, I think as a leader, I'm good at this, but I don't need attention for that. I need to use it for the good of others.
So if somebody's lacking knowledge, that seems like a reasonably easy thing to be able to fix. Read a book, get some experience, talk to some people. What if somebody's missing humility? Even if somebody's listening right now and they're like, oh man, that one's lower for me. How do you grow in humility?
You know, it's funny. I think that it's a lot easier to infuse someone with knowledge or wisdom than with humility. But I'm surprised that when we wrote the book, The Motive, how many people read it and said, oh my gosh, I suddenly realized I'm not leading with humility and I want to, and I don't like the fact that I am. And you can have a desire for it because you recognize it's a good thing. I think God puts in all of our hearts the desire for humility. I think it's the chief virtue because pride is the chief sin. And so I think all of us know we want to have it. So sometimes just being made aware of the fact that you struggle with it is enough to make someone pursue it. The other thing that can make somebody humble is a traumatic experience of failure or difficulty or bottoming out in life. And you realize, oh, I can't do this on my own. So I think there are ways to develop humility as long as a person's willing to purify their intentions. But if a person does it for the wrong reason, then it's not humility at all. It's actually wanting to project it. And that's dangerous.
I think it's also, you know, as you asked that question, Bo, it's like, Pat, you and I have had this conversation where this is not a static thing. You're not like either born like you're going to be a leader for all the right reasons all the time. You can slip. And there were so many people who read that book that thought, I started out humble. I wanted to serve these people. And as I gained more influence and more fame and more fortune, it sort of slid. And they doubled down on the commitment to embrace humility and leading for the right reasons. Whereas knowledge is sort of like, it's not that slight, you know, it's sort of like accumulative in some ways, you know. So the idea that even a well-intentioned leader, you're not always, it's not a black or white, it's not a switch that you flip, it's the something that you're hyper aware of all the time and have to purify your intentions on a daily basis to say, am I going into this company, this meeting, this one-on-one with other people's interests in mind, with the humility that it takes to be a leader and not with my own, you know, fame, fortune, you know, reputation, all of that is the highest thing.
I was so impressed by an athlete I met last week who is a very high profile athlete. We talked about humility and he said to his teammates, he said, I think most people, he goes, I'm a person of faith and I know I'm supposed to be humble. And I really think most people who know me think I'm humble, but you guys know I get so much attention. When I'm in public, people buy me lunch and they want to be around me. And he said, I need to always remember because I can slip. Anybody can slip. And the world is full of people who once were humble and kind of lost their way. And I was so impressed by a young man who was willing to say that to his teammates and letting them know. So I love that you said that, Cody. None of us are like born with this and none of us have it guaranteed. We have to constantly say, am I pursuing wisdom? Am I pursuing humility? And Tracy, what is the third thing that a leader has to have, the hat trick?
The final thing is courage. And we recently talked about this, Pat. I think it was in May. We talked about the three types of courage.
Right. Tell us what the three types, do you remember what they are, Tracy? Am I putting you on the spot?
It's personal.
Right. Confronting yourself.
Yeah. It's public. And then it's interpersonal.
Right. And they're all important. And they're all very different. One is getting up in front of a group of people like Braveheart and having public courage. Another is sitting, looking in the mirror or on your knees praying and saying, am I honest with myself? But the other one is interpersonal, which is having uncomfortable, difficult conversations with people about something that might not be easily received. So courage. Now, one of the things about this is I think courage is the least common in our society. Probably forever has been, but I certainly know in my lifetime, I see less courage than I do wisdom, and I think even humility, which is a surprise, but I think courage is what's most often lacking.
Why is that, Pat?
Wow, I would ask you guys that. I think the idea of being rejected and being unpopular is more scary today, probably because of social media and media in general, and I think that the idea of being rejected and isolated and, yeah, the cancel culture makes people very scared. I'm not sure why. I mean, that's an interesting thing to explore.
You had a really interesting definition of courage, and I think it was from a book Theodoret, I don't mean to put you on the spot now. I might have written it down incorrectly. It looks like you have it. What was that?
Matthew Kelly, a friend of mine and a writer, great guy, wrote, courage is not the absence of fear, but the acquired ability to move beyond fear. Mm. And so I think, Tracy, that I'm glad you made me read that, Bo, because now that I think about it, you said, why is that? People are afraid. But what is the fear? And I think it gets this. I think the greatest fear we have in our society is being rejected and humiliated for saying or doing something that other people don't like. Even when we do it with a pure heart and even when we're right, even when it's in other people's best interest, if people don't receive it that way, we're afraid. And we're a lot less afraid of not challenging somebody, not saying something, not doing something, and having people find out later that we should have. You know, it's that whole idea of the sin of commission versus omission. Mm-hmm. The sin of commission is that I do something that hurts someone a little bit. The sin of omission is that I don't do something that allows someone to be hurt a little bit. And most of us will choose the sin of omission because we're far less likely to get called out for doing that. So I think that's what it is, Tracy. I think it's the fear of being rejected or judged or shamed for doing something even with pure intentions.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's another nuance here. I think for me, there's two types of courage. There's stepping into known suffering, stepping in to do something that I know is going to be hard, and then taking a step towards unknown suffering. That is, I'm going to take a risk to do something, not knowing what it's going to be like on the other side. So for me, the known suffering is quite a bit easier, right? There's courage to step into something that you know is going to be difficult. It's like jumping off that high dive. You've done it before. It's still sort of scary. Then there's the unknown suffering of, I'm going to speak up, confront a friend, do something to look in the mirror, say something publicly of the three types of courage, not knowing what the response is going to be. That one for me is much harder.
Oh, I get it. I get it. You know that there's the potential for it. You're just not sure if it's going to play out that way.
Yep.
Versus, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. You know, I remember years ago, I had a bone marrow. They had to tap into my bone marrow. And people said, yeah, you're going to have to go to the doctor and get that done. And I'd heard it's excruciating. So I just pretended not to know what it was. And people were like, you're really courageous. And I was like, no, it's just going to be miserable. I don't want to think about it. And it sucked. But to go into something and interpersonally or in a human system is so much more fraught with the unknown. And it could be really, really painful. And it's so much easier for us to try to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And that's not courage. That's letting the fear drive us away.
I love that Matthew Kelly quote, because the idea is, you know, I think that we sometimes interpret this as we should eliminate the fear. You know, I like that it's fear and then going beyond fear. There's no virtue in courage if there is not fear on the other side of it, right? Like if there's nothing at risk or there's nothing to be afraid of, then it's not virtue to be courageous, you know? Mm-hmm. So the idea that I feel like some leaders, the alternative might be to say, well, I don't care what happens. Like I'm going to eliminate the part of me that cares of what other people think of me and call that courage. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's also a violation of this. The idea is that there are risks and real fears and costs to being a leader. And courage is the embracing that with humility and wisdom and then moving forward and beyond it anyway.
Right. If you talk to a guy who's an alligator wrestler and he does it for a living and he's done it forever and you go, man, you're really courageous. He's like, no, I know everything about the alligator. There's no risk here at all. I'm not worried about it at all. That's not courage.
Yeah.
It's when you don't know how it's going to play out. That's what it really takes. And that's an interesting thing. And isn't it funny? Gosh, what was I just watching today? I don't remember. Oh, a friend of mine was talking about how there's this thing called World Youth Day, and it was in Portugal. And it's the thing where Catholics come from. 1.5 million people from around the world went to Lisbon, Portugal. And you don't even hear about it in the news. Like they had 1.5 million people in the middle of a field come wow. together from all over the world. And he showed this video where these two guys from Iraq were walking by, young people. And they were talking to him and they were like, these guys go to church every week knowing they could get killed for doing it. That is courage. My friend said, Chris, he said, and we are afraid to do things because somebody might take us off their social media and not like us anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy thing. I think that true courage is when, you know, you don't want to do something, but you know it's the right thing to do it anyway. And sometimes it means there's great cost. So anyway, I just thought of that this morning. I was listening to that on the way to work.
Can you say a little bit more, you know, when you talk about this as the hat trick, wisdom, humility, and courage, hopefully everybody has this. Can you speak to why it's especially important for leaders to have courage rather than just everybody in the world should have courage? Why does it matter more for the leader?
Well, what's funny about is, Bo, let's go back to the thing we talked about before, and that's you have to have humility first. Because let's say somebody has wisdom and courage. Wisdom mean knowledge. So not true wisdom, but not humility. That is the most dangerous person of all. Because they know how to get things done. They're not afraid, but they're not humble. And so it's going to be about them. And that's when other people get really, really hurt. So humility has to be first. Now, if a person had humility and courage, but no knowledge, no wisdom, I suppose that would be the least dangerous. They would just be limited in their ability to have impact, right? So if somebody said, I don't know a lot about leading, but I have courage and I have humility, I'll take that. Because you can impart wisdom to that and they'll learn as they go, but they won't be able to have the impact they'd like to because they lack knowledge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they have wisdom, they have humility, but no courage.
That's the, like the academic, if you will, who like, I know everything about this and I don't think I'm important. Therefore, I'm not going to step out and exercise my leadership. I'm going to sit back and it's enough to know it and not think too highly of myself. And that's the greatest tragic waste because you're not then acting on what you could act on.
Well, I think the other thing to note in this, as we're talking about courage, is it feels a lot like the humility side. It's like courage isn't a switch, but it's not like people are born that way. You have to choose it. You know, you look at the cost, you look at the, and sometimes you choose the right thing, which is I'm going to be courageous. And I bet there's a handful of leaders, many on this screen, even right here, we could say, hey, there was a time where I had the knowledge, I had the wisdom around this, and I'm humble. And I just didn't go out and say the thing that I knew to be true, or I didn't do the courageous thing. And so this is another one where I feel like leaders on a daily basis, weekly basis need to say, like, am I tapping into the courage that is necessary for me to be a leader?
And where humility plays into that, it's so funny how these go together, is if you do have courage and then you do the wrong thing with pure intentions, you're the first one to go, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I thought I was doing the right thing. I want to say I'm sorry. A humble person will be more likely to have that courage because if they make a mistake, they're not afraid to acknowledge that. So these things really do go together and build upon one another. It's really hard to pull any one of these out without the whole stool falling, if you will.
Yeah, and I wonder if somebody is listening to this and be like, oh, I'm lacking courage. I would almost encourage them to start with humility because the more that you are focused about somebody else, I think the easier it is to be courageous and say, well, I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for the people I lead. I'm doing it for somebody who can't stand up for themselves. It wasn't ever about me to begin with. And if you try to have courage for courage's sake, I think it's so easy for that to just become brash or loud or self-promoting. And I wonder if you start with humility, if courage follows.
I think it's a great way to, I mean, this gets very deep and we're doing this in real time. It's like, how do these layer upon one another? But yeah, I think that you're right. Start with humility and then you lose yourself, your self-interest, and it becomes about doing what's in other people's best interest and you're going to have more courage. That's so interesting. You know what I want people to do that are listening to this? Self-assess and get together with other leaders and just say, hey, let's go through this. Knowledge, humility, courage. Which of these is my first, second, and third? And coach one another up around how you can improve in your third area. It's much like we do around Humble, Hungry, Smart, but it's a different subject matter. All right. That was really interesting. Really interesting. When we're on a podcast, we don't always know exactly. We're taking the stuff apart in real time. And I hope, hopefully people benefit from hearing us go through it and learn ourselves. Who's good at the unpaid advertisement today? Bo?
Well, it's about that time of year when people are going back to school. And so today's unpaid advertisement is for back to school supplies. So I don't know if you remember the days of going back to school supply shopping and getting your fresh Dixon Ticonderoga number 2 pencil and your folders and your 3-ring binders, back to school supplies. What do you think?
I'm going to argue with you on this one. I would get pissed off when it was July and they were running ads for back to school stuff. And I was like, I've got 4 weeks left of summer, and they were already advertising back to school, and it would make me so mad at JCPenney or whatever company was doing that. And I remember thinking, just wait. So yes, back to school supplies are great, but they're only great right at the end. And darn it, if there were young people listening to this, they would be saying,
yeah, Pat, I'm totally in on that. You should be having to cram the last day to find everything that you need. But the shelves are probably empty. So
yeah, I know. And that's the thing. So yeah, you need all these things, but let's not do it at the last minute, but let's certainly not do it when we got a month left of summer. And those ads made me so mad. But I think other than that, I do love all the stuff we've got for back to school. You know what else I love about going back to school is getting back to some kind of schedule normalcy. And even though I'm sad for my kids, they're like, oh, homework is starting again. It's kind of nice to have a routine because summer can be pretty disorienting that way. So, yeah. And then they get to see their friends. So that's good. All righty. Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody, on At the Table. And we will talk to you next time. All right. God bless.